All right, everybody, this is Gordon W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, very good. That's the right answer. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2TTT, and the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is open to all stations or licensed to operate in 2-meter band. It's a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, natural phenomena, and science, underlying technology, application of that technology. The fun we have, the misery we've had, the things we'd like to do, the things we'd like to do again, things we'd like not to do again. And, of course, the friends we've made and the service we've provided to others and the like. So it's you pretty much talk about anything you want, as long as you kind of loosely tie it back to amateur radio. So, with no further ado, let me talk about how we check in. We check in by giving our call sign, our name, and indicate whether we have a question, a comment, a for sale, swap, or wanted item, or some combination of those things, or none of the above. Now, if you have none of the above, you might ask yourself, why would I want to check in? Well, that's so that we know, you know, who's there, so we can direct the conversation appropriately. And knowing who the audience is really important for that purpose. So we do check in a somewhat orderly manner. Controlled chaos, as I like to call it. So we're going to start with call signs to begin with Alpha. Please call K2BAR. Just on point, we are alpha-less, so let's try the November 2s. All right. Let's try the whiskeys.
The A2UMP, Jim in Pearl River. Good evening, Gordon. No questions or comments at the moment.
Evening, Jim. Very good. Who is the station that just doubled with Jim? Okay, are there any other whiskeys?
W2JEK, Don with a comment.
Evening, Don. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, just listen.
Evening, Charlie. Nancy pointed out to me that she sees you in the store every so often. And is always happy to see you. Any other whiskeys? A station you were submarginal, I wasn't able to copy who you were. Try that again.
Whiskey Bravo 2, Whiskey Peter
3. Hey Rich, very good. WB2 WBQ, got you. Any other whiskeys?
K2BAR, W2CH, Ray, White Plains, none of the above. Good evening.
Good evening, Ray. All right, any other whiskeys? No traffic. So no traffic, but I didn't get the call on the name.
Okay, is this not getting that, Gordon? This is WYCW.
A lot of picket fencing on you, Steve, but I got you that time. Got all the words that time. I got you. I have no traffic. You're in. Very good. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys? Okay, let's try the Kilo 2s.
K2BIE. Good evening, Gordon. QBV Mobile. Just listen.
Hi, Joel, and hi, George. George, what's your pleasure?
Well, I would like to tell a tale of the exigencies of electronics, and I guess it would apply to anything. It happened to manifest itself in my computer, but it was enough to leave me scratching my bald head.
All exigent anecdotes and stories are welcome here, so we'll put you on the list. We'll get you after after Don. Okay, any other Kilo 2s?
K2BAR. K2JVS, J Joe and Wayne. I got a quick comment and a question. Good evening, Gordon. Good evening to the net.
Okay, very good, Joe. K2JVS. And let's see, before you we have W2BIE. Before that we have W2JEK. I'm doing this in my head, guys, so keep me honest and also kind of keep this rolling in some reasonable way. Thank you very much, Joe. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilo 2s?
Tony, K2AMI, with no questions, no comments, but would like more information about the flea market tomorrow, on Saturday.
We'll do that in the announcements. Sure, we can do that. Very good. Tony, welcome aboard. And again, happy birthday, plus plus. All right. Any other Kilo 2s? Okie doke. How about any other Kilos?
82DBK listening. Driving for you.
Thank you, Gary. KD2DDK, very good. Who is the station who lost the DDK? Okay, any other Kilos? Brady, let's see. Echolink stations are wishing to access by Echolink, by the way. I include, you'll need to use the K2FJ-L Echolink node. Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L Echolink node. And you can check in. I know we have at least one station possibly there, so I'll check now. And to OEL, are you on Echolink? And are there any other stations on Echolink you can tell us about? K2BAR. Not on Echolink now, but we'll get him later. All right, very good. All right, are there any other late check-ins? Please call K2BAR. Any call sign. We'll go to announcements. The first announcement that was requested was Hamfest on Saturday, run by Boy Scout Troop 139 and Venture Cruise 7373. It'll be at St. John the Evangelist Roman Catholic Church's Convent Hall on North William Street. It's a one block long road. You can't miss it. It's in Bergenfield. Doors open for vendors at 6 a.m. and for buyers at 7:30. There'll be a very active kitchen, and they'll also, which will have breakfast and lunch, yummy breakfast sandwiches, I can assure you, and the like. And then also we will have the Hamfest will also share the floor space with a couple of other interesting things. You might want to bring other members of your family, or recommend that even non-hams attend, because we have a holiday craft fair and holiday kind of flea market kind of thing. We also have pet adoption, and I think there'll be some activities for the kids, little kids, you know, that kids like to do. So hopefully you'll attend. There is a small donation at the door. I forget what it is. If anyone wants further information, I can email you the flyer just by emailing me at w2ttt@att.net. w2tango@att.net. Alrighty, are there any questions about this? And the second announcement is I'll be running a one-day class, review class, for the technician license on December 27th, all day. There is a donation of $20 to the Boy Scout troop for the purpose of that. Your class will go all day, it starts at 8 a.m. and we finish up around 6, and with a little breather, the test team comes in, and I'll let Don talk about that. W2JEK, K2BAR.
K2BR and the net W2JEK. Yes, the BAR group will run a VE test session at 7 o'clock that Friday night, which will be the 27th at St. John's Church, and we'll be running all exams technician general and extra exams. We'll have them all with us. And test fee $15 and will remain $15. I just read that in the QST, so it's even for next year. Have any questions about that? It's one of my questions, comes every year, so good news, stayed the same. So we'll be running that test session there on Friday night. We also have one tentative for January. I have to verify the date, so on some of my test sessions for the early part of next year. So that's back to net, W2JEK. If anybody has any questions, please ask.
Are there any questions for Don or me regarding either of these two activities, the Hampfest on Saturday or the, the test session and also the review course on the 27th? Station 6, Gordon, go ahead.
W2JK, yeah, I'll give the whole spiel as long as I'm giving it. Test fee is $15. Person coming for a test needs one form of photo ID, like a driver's license or a passport, or two forms of non-photo ID. And if you already have a license, bring your original license plus a photocopy of that license. And also, if you wish to use a calculator, you may, but we will examine it and make sure there is nothing stored in its memory. Devices other than a calculator that can be used as a calculator, such as a cell phone or iPod or whatever, are not being permitted. Just a straight up and down calculator. I think that covers it. Back to that, W2JEK.
Okie doke. Thank you very much. I'll again ask if are there any questions or about these sessions or even licensing or anything else related to it. Maybe even want to know how to become a VE. Don's always looking for new members of his team. Something to think about. W2TTT, anybody? Alrighty. Well, thank you, Don. Alright, so I guess our first person is K2BIE with a he wants to spin a yarn or some other thing. I don't know what he wants to do. So, George, over to you, K2BAR.
Well, thank you very kindly, Gordon. What I wanted to do is to just share an experience that I had this week that pointed out that electronics definitely has its own set of rules and regulations, and these do not necessarily follow the order of the universe, believe me. Monday morning, I turned on my backup computer, which had not run for maybe a week or so, and it didn't boot. I said, what the hell is this? And I proceeded to try again, and it proceeded to fail again, and it was giving me every indication that it had a bad hard drive, and I said, oh my. Anyway, I went to work on it, and it was dead. There was nothing. There was no sign of life, except for, of course, the gibberish that comes up after the post. Anyway, to make a long story short, I switched over to the second hard drive that I have in there, which is backed up by Ghost, Norton Ghost 12, and so I still had a workable system, but I felt very uneasy about this because the hard drive that I was trying to use was relatively young. It was a 500 GB Western Digital, and that gave me pause. I said, uh-oh, what about the backup, if that's no good? Well, that backed up just fine. That worked like crazy. So I called my friendly computer maven, and he said, oh, I'll get you a new drive because this one's still under warranty. And I wasn't happy about having to drive down to where he is and drop it off, but he said, I'll do it anyway. Before buttoning up the system, I said, you know what, let me put that back in there one more time, just for fun. I'll put it in as the slave drive and run from the master. And I did. And it booted. Now, this wasn't just a simple matter of dirty contacts or anything like that, because I had done an extensive go-over on the unit beforehand. But I just wanted to point out to you, dead isn't always dead, especially in electronics. Back to you, Gordon. W2TTT in the group, K2BIE.
Very good, George. That's a useful tale. So, to recap, some things are not as they often appear, and you just have to sit there and you have to kind of reintroduce all the parts to their reality.
Well, I will say that sums it up nicely, Gordon. All's well that ends well. I just finished buttoning up the system again, and I'm going to put this little puppy back on the rack. K2BAR, K2BIE.
That's great to hear. There was another station in there doubled. I'm sorry. Try it again. Okay, very good, George. Thank you very much. Does anybody have any thoughts? Yeah, my wife's pointing out, N2FWI is here. So don't leave it too long, otherwise you'll be back to square one again, grin, grin. Anybody have any questions, comments, or anecdotes, observations, et cetera, that they would like to add to George's tale of woe? Anyhow, that's a good thing to keep in mind, George. Thank you again.
One more comment, Gordon?
Absolutely. It's your ball.
Several months ago, I was visited by a very helpful technician from Cablevision. And he started doing some things which I looked at and I said, huh? Like he was routinely undoing the connectors and putting the connectors back on. And I said, why are you doing that? He said, well, you'd be surprised. He says, there's a thing that we know of called a dry contact. I said, that's interesting. And he says, basically, if you've got a problem and you can't get it to work, you ought to just take this off first and then put it back on, and, you know, half the time it'll work. Oh, my God. Well, I guess this is the living proof of that. Back to you.
Yeah, it certainly is. Although I'm not so sure I would use the term dry contact, but that's a whole other matter. Dry contact in my world means something very different, but then again, I'm a telephone geek, so, you know, I can actually spell dry contact, which is a hard service to acquire these days, as we virtualize the network and the like, but anyway. All the telephone networks are being highly virtualized these days, distracting to IP. So, anyway. All right. Very good, George. Anything else?
No, that's it. I'm just sitting here and enjoying the net. Thank you, Gordon.
All right. Very good. Thank you, George, for sharing that with us. That's awesome. All right. Let's see. Joe? K2ZVS, I think it's your turn. K2BAR. Welcome aboard.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's Joe, K2JVS. I just got a quick comment and a question, electronics question. Quick comment is I got my extra last night, so I'm a happy camper at this point after 6 months of studying. So that's my comment. But I have an electronics question. I'm using a device that's a telephone ring detector on a circuit in my house that when the telephone rings, it shuts off the audio system in the house. And it detects the ring, which I think is 50 volts DC. But the problem I have is whenever I pick up the phone, the switch hook also triggers it. So I was thinking about putting a capacitor in there. And I was wondering if anybody out there had any kind of recommendations on what kind of a capacitor
I would use and how I might guess at what a value is that might work. And that's my question. Thank you.
So I'm trying to understand, pardon me for butchering your call, Joe, K2JVS, W2TTTK2BAR. I guess I'm trying to understand, so when you pick up the phone to use it, it's also muting the audio, and you don't want that, is that correct?
Right. For some reason, this ring detector is seeing that as a ring, and I was thinking that if I could put a capacitor across it, then maybe that would dampen it. But, you know, I just know enough about electronics to be dangerous, not enough to get much accomplished, so I figured I'd ask if anybody might have some idea where I might even start.
And so you want your basic, well, it sounds to me like when you're drawing current, you take it off hook, that DC current is doing its thing. The real question is, will the dial tone be perceived as enough AC to get across even a capacitor and trigger the circuit? I would try a 0.1 capacitor in series with one or both legs of the loop of the pair. Try that just for a grin. If that's too big, try a 0.01, two of those. I think 0.1, especially since there's an issue there in series, I would try that just for grins.
And is it important as to, you know, what is there anything, any other spec on it, on a capacitor, or just the 0.1? Is it a certain type of capacitor besides that, or no?
I think it's just this ceramic should be fine. Something, you know, 100 volts or so, or bigger. It's fine. 600 volts is probably best.
Okay, very good. I'll try that. Thanks for the comment. K2JVS.
I'm just winging it here because here's a couple of concerns I have. I don't know if the value is quite right, number one. Number two, try one capacitor and then the other, or one in each leg, or one in either of the two legs. You might want to just make a little breakout box and start playing with that so you can tack in stuff. You know, make yourself a telephone jack with a way to tack in capacitors any which way you want. I do that a couple of different ways. If you do use clip leads, I'd make sure you use decent clip leads so that you're sure you've got a contact, et cetera. And go at it that way. It's pretty nifty. I would give that a go.
I certainly will, and I appreciate it, and I'll try it out, and I'll let you know how it goes. Maybe I'll even get to it before I get to the Ham Fest Saturday. Thank you very much, K2JVS.
Okay, very good. Yeah, but I would make yourself a little breakout fixture of some sort so that you can screw with capacitor values. My concern is that, besides the fact that I'm not really sure of the values, but I get the general sense of what you're trying to do, I'm not sure if the dial tone that you draw, which also has an AC component, won't trigger the damn circuit. That's number one. Number two, I'm not convinced that it's quite as easy as that. It might be a bigger capacitor, etc. Definitely something not polarized. Well, I guess, yeah, it could be polarized, I guess. Doesn't much matter. I've actually not taken a DC voltage on drawn dial tone in a long time. I just don't remember what that is. You might want to start with that question and maybe even put a scope in line and go from there.
Very good. Thank you very much. You gave me some good ideas, and I'm going to certainly try them.
And God knows I could make a few phone calls tomorrow and
have a few of my friends say, "Are you remember this?" I would put my reputation on the mode, you know, up for grabs just for a few minutes.
Very good. Thanks a lot.
Very good. Anybody else have any thoughts on this? You know what? Don, W2JK, do you remember what dial tone draws?
50 milliamps.
Yeah, of DC, right?
48 volts of DC, and that's the, if you don't get the idea is that 50 mils is you need that for to run those carbon granules. And if you are in a long loop, they put in a thing called a dial impulse repeater, which supplies battery closer to your telephone, so you will have 50 milliamperes.
Yep. Okay, very good. But what's the AC component from the dial tone? Do you remember?
The tone on there, a dial tone, I think that's along with the battery. The battery's there all the time. The only time you get something different is when you have a ringing current, which is 80 volts plus some voltage that makes it look like 105 volts AC.
Okay, very good. Well, that's also instructive. So keep that in mind that while you're playing with this, Joe, that you could get an 80 volts, you know, ring in your bell, and it'll probably hurt you. It'll at least give you a little bit of a sting, you know.
I'll certainly watch out for that. Thanks for the tip. I'll make sure I don't have any caffeine that morning.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Don. See, that's why we need to know who's here, because I just remembered that Don would know this answer having worked in a CO a few weeks of his life. Like, I don't know, maybe, I'm going to guess, maybe, 1,500 weeks of his life, something like that. Or was it 15,000, whatever. 30 years plus, wasn't that right? Is that right, Tom?
I asked a question, K2QBV Mobile.
Hey, Joel?
Did you sell that mobile tower I see advertised all the time?
No, every time I advertise it, within a day or two, two new people say, "Oh, I'm really interested, send me pictures," and I do. And then they proceed to tell me what they're going to do instead.
Okay.
It's a little frustrating. One person was on his way to my house when something came up that was rather extraordinary. I won't go into it here, but it was annoying. And he was unable to complete the transaction because of the misfortunes of life. I'll just leave it at that. But anyway, thank you for asking. It's Thursday, so I'll be putting out yet another blurb, and we'll see what happens. I have actually just an unbelievably impressive gallery of people who've expressed interest in the tower. I received pictures, and I have taken to following up on most of the recent ones to find out, okay, since you decided not to buy it, what did you decide to do instead? Mostly as well, I'll go build this, I'll scratch my navel, I'll do that. I have a unique housing arrangement, therefore I have to do it this way. It's like, okay, whatever. I just have to be patient, persistent, and just keep putting it out there, and eventually someone will buy it. So you can buy it.
I keep doubling with you. Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah, but you're just perhaps just out of sync, or we're out of sync with each other, is where I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I was just wondering. Thank you. I am Neely Holm, K2QBV Mobile, Spring Valley, New York, clear. Thank you.
Okay, Joel, very good. Alrighty. Any other stations with comments on this subject?
And Joel has a question.
Good evening, Noel. Go ahead.
Is it my turn, though? I just want to be put in the list.
Gary, have we depleted the list at this time? KD2DDK, K2BAR.
Did Joel make his comment? K2DDK? That's the only thing I might have missed.
Okay, we got through JVS, we got through BIE, we got through JEK. Was there anybody else on the list other than N2OEL?
Nope, we're good, according to my records.
With my recollection as well. Okay, very good. Noel, take it. N2OEL, get to be AR.
Okay. We're on the subject of coal context. About 30 years ago, I had a 1968 Chevy van. I would drive down the road with this thing, and every once in a while, it would go completely dead. Poof. No headlights, no nothing. Motor would stop. This is very disconcerting. The last time it happened, I was on a backcountry road. It was pitch black. There was cloud cover. It went. I held my steering wheel straight and put on the brakes and didn't crash. And then after a couple minutes, everything would come back on. The headlights would come back on. The lights would come back on. You could start the motor. It was freaky. So the way I fixed that back then, which was also in like 1970, is I went through every connection on the hot lead and the ground lead, and then I took a TV tuner cleaner and unplugged every connection that I could find, any place in the vehicle, all the way through the ignition system, on the motor, the spark plugs, everything. And it cured the problem forever. Now I have a problem with the Saturn, where every once in a while, it doesn't want to start. The voltmeter that I plug in the cigarette lighter reads 2 volts. Yet my radio, which is hooked to the battery through a pair of 10-gauge wires directly to the battery, my ham radio works perfectly well. I can run it in high power, which is 15 amps. Everything is fine with the radio, but the vehicle is dead. Can't start it, nothing. Can't even use the remote. Yes, I called AAA. 4 days later, they came. I mean, well, it was 4 days before I got AAA. They came. The guy got in and started right up. I think I'm going to have to do the same thing to this car, but when they were talking about coal context, that's two examples.
Okay, so what you may want to do is try a couple of things. One is the old turn the headlights on for 15 seconds routine, turn it off, and try starting the car. Another one is you could repeat that, except turn the ignition on for 15 seconds before you actually turn it to crank.
Well, the problem is there's no juice. The voltage coming into the ignition system, as I said, I've read it from the cigarette lighter, is 2 volts, or, you know, in that range. Therefore, I don't even think the computer works. And I'm pretty sure that my headlight switch typically tells the computer what I want to do, and the computer turns on the headlights. I don't think I control the headlights directly. I know definitely the heater switch doesn't control the heater. It tells the body computer what to do, and the body computer controls the speed of the heater. It's gotten to pretty much the point where everything in the car is controlled by the stupid computers.
Yes, it is, much to my chagrin. I don't have a solution. I'm going to ask that you continue the conversation. I have to step out of the car at this point and take care of something, but it's a good question. And that's how I would attempt to solve it. N2OEL, K2BAR, I've got to step out.
Well, that's about it for me. So I think I'll send it over to K2DDK, and this is into oil.
I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, a worthwhile effort to try. I suppose that would be my heartfelt advice. Any other, anybody else have any thoughts on what to do about this?
K2AMI, what is the thought?
Johnny?
I'm not an automotive expert, but I picked up something that you guys mentioned. You said, quote, the computer controls everything. I would go into the computer connections and look for, quote, those dry connections on the computer. And if possible, unplug the computer and replug it. And even be suspicious of a faulty computer. But not until I've proved that it was not a connection problem. It sounds to me like maybe the heart of the system is controlling everything. What do you think, Gordon? Or let's turn it back to Gordon.
This is an automobile computer. They tend not to be very happy about being maltreated. In fact, you start unplugging things from your computer in a modern car, you're going to be towed to the dealer and they'll charge you about $500 to reset all the software. I know this because I have read these anecdotes. In fact, some of them do it in a semi-dishonest way. Let me give you an example. Nancy's Hyundai has a radio that every so often, you know, gets into an anomalous state and says, I don't know what to do. So you have to hold the little button down with a paper clip while you power up the radio, and magically everything's reset fine. There have been dealers that have charged northbound $300 to do that operation, and even gone to the extreme of replacing components in order to make it look like something intelligent was done, taking advantage of an uninformed consumer. Okay, does that help you at all, Noel?
Well, if I had a wonderful heated garage or it was summertime, I would consider doing a lot of it. I would definitely work on checking that the ground connection to the motor and to the chassis back and forth was all there. I'd use some of Gene's KGI's nice ground wire. And I would also check the connections from the main power supply going in to see where it's going and see if that bolt might be loose or something. And I would clean all the connections and put some of that silicone conductive grease on it, just to make sure. And you know, the battery is new, and I know it's not the battery because the ham radio stuff still works, because of course it's directly off the battery. It's just frustrating because I'm afraid it's going to leave me someplace stuck. Back to that, this is it.
Let's keep this in mind, that the connections for the computer and the connections for the battery for the radio are entire. I mean, your ham radio are entirely autonomous. Ham radio does not require any, shall we say, handshake or blessing, imprimatur or whatever from the computer of the vehicle. So consider that, you know, as a potential issue. I don't know what else to tell you, but you might want to look online for that characteristic behavior. And I've been able to debug a lot of things by just searching the internet and get a much clearer picture as to what's what and where's where. How did EIR go?
I came in very late. There were things I wish I knew. If I listened with half an ear at one point, On this score, may I relate an experience? Years ago, I had a Volkswagen Rabbit, and it had a bad ignition switch, and I replaced the switch, and that took care of the problem for a while, and that switch went bad, and so on. I think I went through 3 or 4 switches. I remember one time coming down the New England Thruway in Connecticut where the car died. You know, I was doing 60, and a tractor trailer was barreling down on me when it quit. So, given that the ham radio equipment is direct to the battery and everything else cuts out, maybe it's the ignition switch. Just a thought. K2EIR.
Yeah, maybe. Although the ignition switch is in the circuit for the auxiliary power, you know, in vehicle jack, but it does gate it somehow. All right, that's a good idea. Anybody else have any thoughts?
K2BIE.
To George, go right ahead.
Thank you, Gordon. Let me say good evening to my friend Howie. This is going back a little ways, but let's strip aside computers and other crap that are not in the cranking circuit. An automobile starting motor requires a 300-amp surge in order to start. Ain't no question about that. And you can have a battery cable connected to the battery, which is perfectly adequate for 15 to 20 amperes, and as soon as it gets hit with a 300 ampere demand, it quits. So my first place to start would be go to the battery terminal, clean them thoroughly, and then tighten those suckers until you can barely scream with the wrench, and then see how things are after that, because this idea of having a ghost failure, you know, just don't. Don't hack it. I have had this happen with me on older cars that didn't have quite so many computers, but like I said, the computer is not at all involved with the cranking. Go ahead.
Not so much in a modern car. You'd be surprised, George. However, your point about the resistance is well taken. Noel, you did assert that the battery was new and therefore likely to have good solid connections, but maybe the cabling at the connectors is just not what it needs to be. Are they the kind that you just screw down either on posts or on studs, and are they molded and bonded firmly to the wire, or are they just clamped onto the wire? Just curious. Over.
It's the standard side terminal mount. The side terminals are screwed into the battery. Then the cable goes onto that, and the same screw that's screwing in the cable has the two It's the special battery connectors that the audio nuts use that is on top of the antenna cables. So the antenna cable, I'm sorry, what am I saying? The power cable going to the car, the ground and the power, are next to the battery itself. Then the screws that go through the leads to go to the radio, and then through the power connections for the car, and then into the battery, and then it's tightened down, and it's been taken off and put on. Now, I had a battery that was on there before. I had the same symptoms, and the battery was getting weak because the car had been sitting for several months and not started while I was in the nursing home. So what we did is we just simply changed the battery, and I figured that solved all my problems. Until a month later, this happened again. Happens just once in a while. And then when it goes away, everything tests out good. Driving me crazy, actually, because you never know where it's going to leave you flat someplace where the car won't start. The thing that's range is on the wiring, the car wiring itself has a direct current that doesn't go through a computer, a direct connection. It doesn't go through a computer or any other way to the cigarette lighter. And that voltmeter that I plugged in the cigarette lighter reads 2, 3, 4 volts with no starter current being drawn. Just, you know, plug it in and sitting there, everything is off. The lights are very dim if I turn the key on. And it's 3 or 4 volts, which indicates to me there's a high resistance either in the ground connection or the hot connection, which then goes away. Back to that, the central area.
Yeah, from what you're describing, it sounds like George is right. You're going to have to trace it out and see what gives. To refresh my memory, where are you seeing that 2-volt measurement and under what conditions? And have you thought of comparing that to the cable that goes to the battery for your radio? Can you break the connection to the radio in the vehicle and take a voltage measurement there as well and compare them?
I read the voltage measurement off of the lighter plug, which doesn't go through the computer or anything else. That's just through the vehicle wiring. The voltage measure, I don't have to bother measuring the voltage through the radio because my transceiver, if I get much below 12 volts, does not work. And yet I can sit there and transmit with 15 amps at high power, and I know the battery is good from that alone because the thing's still getting full voltage. So I'm postulating a high resistance in the power cable. I asked the auto repair shop to take off the ground cable where it connects to the motor, clean it, and put it back. I don't know if they did that. I also asked them to take off the main power cable where it connects to wherever it connects to, clean it, and put it back. I don't know if they did that. But that was 2 or 3 times it's been back to the shop for the same thing, and I keep asking them to do the same thing. And I don't think I'm getting comprehension on the part of the auto repair mechanic as to what they could do to fix this problem. Back to that, Antonio.
Okay, so if you're not getting through to these guys multiple times or concerned that you're not, why don't you take it to somebody different? I mean, that's straight up. I mean, three times not the charm, you know, it's like 3 times now, it's stupid.
Well, if I can get this vehicle up to my house, I'm going to put it on the back of my motorhome and drag it to my brother, who's a master car mechanic, in Lucille, Mississippi. But I could probably, my friend Carlos and myself could probably fix it if it was warm outside. But you can't do much when your hands freeze. Back to that, N2OU.
Okay, well, you know what? Call Central Bergen Auto in Bergenfield. Ask for Mike. Tell him you know me. And ask him if he would simply just check the plus and minus cables on either end to make sure that they're actually connected to the things they need to be connected to so that the ignition is working. Just ask him to open it up, clean it up, re-crank them down, and be done with it, you know? Let's just keep things simple here. And that would be my recommendation. Anybody else?
What about Rocky? This is K2EIR.
K2BIE.
Go to Rocky, too. Absolutely. Rocky does wonderful work at night. That's a great idea. He's on 955 in another hour or two. George, go ahead.
Thank you much. I'm familiar with Rocky. I mean, he may be the cure, but one thing is for certain. If you have any kind of a connection difficulty to the power source, if you could put your voltmeter into the cigarette lighter and measure the voltage while you are cranking, you'll have a pretty good indication, you know, whether or not you have a high resistance in that cable.
I agree. And Noel, does it attempt to crank? Does it just go wonk or something? Or what do you get? Do you get a dimming of the interior lights? What happens?
Okay, let's compare the two cars. The Chevy, when I we've been carrying around these little voltmeters, by the way, which, by the way, I've been selling for $3, get them on eBay for like $5 for $14 or something. And I've been hand them out at Kidnight, and several other people by myself have been driving around with the voltmeters stuck in the cigarette lighters, noticing that the voltage, by the way, can actually approach 15 volts when you're driving down the street. And the resting voltage is like, when you turn off the car, it's like 13 volts, and it slowly drops down. And when you come in the car and it's got a fully charged battery, it's right around the 12.8. Now, on the Chevy, when I go to start the car, it starts so fast that I don't see the voltmeter go much below 10 volts. It takes one or two readings, and the car starts up. On the other car, the Saturn, the one I'm having a problem with, it used to do the same thing. However, now what happens, you get in the car, the voltmeter is reading, you know, 12.6 volts, whatever. You turn the key, the starter solenoid engages, it goes clunk, and that's it. The voltmeter drops. And this is not all the time. Just when you have the problem, which is weeks or, you know. And when you release it, the dash lights are very dim. The voltmeter reads 2, 3, 4 volts. And you sit there frustrated. And if you turn the key off and the lights go out, you turn it back on, then nothing, no clunk, no nothing, 3 or 4 volts. Meanwhile, you turn the radio on and transmit at full power. Yeah, no problem. Because, of course, the radio is directly connected to the battery through 10-gauge wires that we put in. You give up frustrated, you leave, you go away, come back a day or two later with AAA, the guy hops in the car, it starts up. Back to net, Android.
K2BIE.
Gorgeous, somebody doubled.
Gordon, have I got it? K2BIE.
George, State Pilot, who was the other station? K2EIR.
I don't know. I heard him under your Kazoo signal, too, Harry.
What about now?
Is it on again?
Sounds like there's someone there with the wrong PL.
W2TTT, K2BIE.
Yeah, go ahead, W2TTT.
Hey, Gordon, we're having some ghosties and ghoulies here, but I think what our friend recited was pretty much the story of what you'll get if you have a bad contact to the battery. I mean, and basically all this other stuff is just falderal. Because batteries do recover capacity overnight or in a couple of days if you have mistreated them. But basically, I would think that, you know, he could be hugely benefited by having someone go in and actually do the Armstrong approach and tighten every connection to that battery. K2BIE.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I think that's kind of what we're saying. All right, well, thank you, George. Thank you, Noel. Are there any other comments for the net?
82DDK?
Gary?
You guys know me. I'm not the mechanic. I turn wrenches the wrong way. But that ground strap, and, you know, everything I've listened to all night long points to the ground strap that goes to the motor. Even though the current mechanic may have tightened it, there may be something wrong with that ground strap. It's corroded from the inside somehow because it's down low on the motor. Take your jumper cables out and jump to another ground someplace next time or this time or whatever. You know, I'm sitting here eliminating all the possibilities, and it sounds, you know, I agree with Gordon and everybody else. It's got to be a major ground wire.
Okay, very good. Anybody else?
2JEK.
Don?
I remember in my car, General Motors car, your that cigarette lighter that you're looking at with the bulb meter in it goes to a fuse block under the dashboard, which is supplied by several different, has fuses for several different things, the headlight, this, that, and the other thing. And if your headlights are out and your cigarette lighter is tipped down at 3 volts and the thing isn't going to start, etc., it sounds like a common thing. There's something common between that fuse block and wherever it goes to the battery. Either that or the, as they mentioned, the ground strap. Either one of those cables could become very corroded. But I don't know what it is, but that could very well be a possibility. I remember a guy that used to work with us was not up on his electronics, had a Packard, and he knew that the battery was weak, but he knew that if he cranked, he turned and put a wrench on his battery connectors and tightened them up a little bit, the car would start. And I watched him do this one day, and he had the wrench on the hot side of the battery, and he's cranking the bolt, and the wrench actually was touching the frame, the body of the car, and there was should have been a blinding explosion, but there was nothing. It's how bad his terminals were corroded, and they weren't even, and the worst of it was that because they were so corroded, the battery wasn't taking the charge, so he had a double problem there. So, yeah, I think that's something to look at in that area, is corrosion. Back to that, W2JK.
Good, Don. K2BAR. All right, very good. So, no, I think we've beaten this one to death, so I think we're going to go to the next subject. Is that okay with you? Do you have another subject you want to cover, or you, is this this what you had for the evening?
No, I think we beat it to death, but I'd like to get Rocky's phone number.
Connected. It's KD2 Bravo Oscar Romeo, KD2 BOR. You'll hear him pipe up in the next hour or two. Alrighty. Any other stations with other topics? Otherwise, we'll close the net. K2BAR. Hey, folks. Well, just want to report that W2LCN also bought one of those digital ammeter voltmeters. He bought the 50-amp version, which probably was smarter than the 100 that I bought, but worked great for Rick, and he sent me a photograph of it tonight, and it was really kind of cool. He showed a 2-amp draw on transmit, and it worked fine, just like the way I had mine set up. Those larger ones don't show much on receive unless you actually draw some reasonable current, but pretty neat stuff. Tony, thank you for pointing those out to us a couple of weeks back. That turned out to be useful instruments. So anyway, 7-3, have a good one, everybody. And I look forward to seeing you guys at the Hampfest on Saturday over at Bergenfield, or maybe at the test session of the what do you call it, the review course, the technician review course on the 27th, and we'll chat with you later. This is K2BAR returning the repeater to normal amateur radio use. Thanks all.
K2BAR.